CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show as I speak. What day? Monday, April 22nd, 22nd, 22nd. When I'm not doing this show, I'm obsessively following the Trump trial. I got to get a life, ladies and gentlemen. The hush money trial in New York, which kind of relates to the topic we're talking about. Payoffs. Paying people, in that case, to shut up. Swallow their stories. We'll be taking a deep dive in that. I have this story that I've been dying to talk about since I first read it on April 12th. So to get started, I'll ask my distinguished guest to introduce himself, and then away we will go. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Ben, it's Dave McKinney. I'm with WBEZ. How are you?
I'm doing well. Dave McKinney. Okay, well, another one of those shy guests. He's an incredibly talented, gifted reporter. He used to work for the Bright One, the Chicago Sun-Times, been at BEZ for a long time. He was on the show, if you remember last time, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we talked about Blago tapes. Go back and listen to it. It has stood the test of time. A very funny show. We kind of had a field day with the Blago tapes. This one, Dave, was, I mean, dude, I can't even get the words out. I can't even articulate what's going on in this particular story. Ladies and gentlemen, it may get a little, you know, deep divey. It may get a little wonky. Take your pen, take your paper out, take notes, pay attention. All right. So this has to do, I was alerted to this issue by a story. I believe it ran on April 12th on BEZ and my beloved Bright One, the Chicago Sun-Times. You co-did it with, who did you do it with? I can't read my writing. Who's your co? John Seidel. My apologies. Couldn't read my own writing. And it had to do with a very creative way defense attorneys with cooperative judges of sort of eradicating bribery as a crime. Now, that's my interpretation of it. Dave, you may have a different interpretation, but that's not how I read it. These defense lawyers came up and go, how can we create a way out where politicians are allowed to take bribes in exchange for services? And they go, I know, we won't call them bribes. We'll call them gratuities. As like there's a distinction between a bribe and a gratuity. So, Dave, the ball is in your court to explain the specifics of this case that has found its way all the way to the Supreme Court and is delaying the start of Michael Joseph Madigan's, I don't know what to call it, bribery, gratuity, corruption trial here in Illinois. Take it away.
Yeah, I mean, Ben, it's like we all thought, having watched these, you know, the never-ending stream of corruption cases in Illinois, that we all understood what bribery was. But now there's a new test. And I guess what I would suggest is just like, let's lay out the facts of what this case is all about and decide if that constitutes bribery or not. The federal government believes it does. The defense bar, as you say, does not. And it looks like they have some support among justices on the U.S. Supreme Court to their thinking. But here's the basic facts. So in Portage, Indiana, which is, you know, I guess you could call it a bedroom community of Gary, Indiana, it had a mayor named James Snyder. And about roughly a decade ago, he was involved in awarding contracts to purchase two garbage trucks for the city. Now, Snyder had campaigned on improving garbage collection in Portage, and so this was an important issue to him. And so the contracts for these two trucks go out, they go to a vendor, it's over $1 million, and the deal is sealed. The city gets the trucks. But then the next thing that happens after that contract is awarded is that Snyder, realizing that he is his personal bank account is not doing so well, he approaches the contractor, the newly minted Portage, Indiana contractor, and says, "Can I come work for you?" And they went back and forth a little bit and decided that they would have Mayor Snyder be a consultant for this city contractor. And it wasn't defined what his duties would be, nor was there a contract memorializing the deal. But $13,000 went out of, you know, went from the vendor into the pocket of Mayor Snyder. And then that was enough for the feds to catch wind of it and prosecute him for bribery. And so what now is before the Supreme Court is the question of, all right, this happened after the fact, after the official act. Does it constitute bribery, or does it constitute a gratuity, a thank you, a bouquet of flowers, a campaign contribution, whatever you want to call it? And you know, one of the requirements about bribery is that there has to be an established quid pro quo. And Snyder's lawyers say that because this happened after the fact, there was no quid pro quo because he went about his mayoral duties in signing these contracts without any expectation of getting money. And so that's what is at issue here. And it's a very important decision because there are two basic federal bribery statutes that are very similar. One of them pertains to federal officials who are involved in bribery involving more than $5,000. In that case, in that statute, this sort of after the fact gratuity, if you want to call it that, is covered. But in the law that Snyder was charged with, pertaining to state and local officials, it's much more murky. It's not as explicit about this after the fact kind of payment. And so that's where we're at right now. And we should know more by June, if not before, about what the Supreme Court's going to do with this.
All right. So just so I understand, a jury has already convicted him. This is an appeal of that. Am I correct on that point? Was he convicted by a jury, or was he not convicted by a jury? Go ahead.
He was convicted by a jury, and then that conviction was upheld by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago. And so what's kind of at play here is that there are two other appeals circuits across the country where this particular state and local bribery statute has been interpreted differently. So the court is coming in to try to inject some clarity about what this law covers.
So the issue, as I see it, is whether this mayor said effectively, in so many words, said to this garbage can company, "I will get you the contract for the garbage cans if you give me money." Or the garbage can company said to the mayor, "We will give you money for these garbage cans if you give us the garbage cans," if you follow what I just said. And was that, this is the very important point, was that established clearly during the trial that there was no before the granting of the garbage cans kind of conversation between the mayor and the garbage can company?
Yeah, I believe it was. And this is all activity that occurred after the awarding of the contract for the garbage trucks.
So we're led to believe that it never even dawned on the Garbage King company or the mayor that there would be a gratuity given to him or any kind of money given to him, that it was solely a matter of his administration awarding this company the contract for the garbage cans, correct?
Correct. And, you know, the thing here is that, we've all encountered financial problems along the way at different points where, you know, our budget, our paycheck may not go as far as we want it to go. And we have to get more money, but there are a lot of places people can go get money. And in this case, this mayor just happened to choose the same place that his administration had been dealing with. Now, you know, I think to a layman, we can point to a jury, as you mentioned earlier. A layman looks at this and says, case closed. This is bribery. Yeah. The mayor had no business going after the fact and taking money from, you know, so soon after a contract like this was awarded. And so it's going to be, it's going to come down to, you know, the arguments that occurred earlier this month on this case before the Supreme Court was really interesting, because some of the conservative justices, and maybe we'll talk about this in a moment, but they seem to hold out a fair amount of sympathy to the mayor's position that this wasn't a bribe.
Well, yeah. So the distinction, as it was made, I forget who made this distinction, that is, there's an essential difference between a gratuity and a bribe. And I've been exploring that in my mind, like, what is the distinction between a gratuity and a bribe? And then generally they go, well, the distinction is this for that. So we'll give you this in exchange for that. All right. And they say there is no this for that in this case. And Dave, I'm like, well, no, there is always a this for that in any gratuity. So you go to a restaurant, they give you good service, you give them a tip. You give them a gratuity. If they give you bad service, you're not going to give them a tip. So it's automatically, there is an automatic this for that in a gratuity. That's why I said this is a distinction without meaning. He did something that benefited them. They rewarded him. That's the indisputable exchange.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, we've both been around government long enough that, you know, we've seen behavior like this, and generally it doesn't pass a smell test. And you have to think about it as well, that, like, you know, if I live in a one bedroom studio apartment and I need to call up my mayor in whatever town I live in, and I need to have them, you know, come do and send a street sweeper through, you know, I don't have the means afterwards necessarily to send a thank you. You know, beyond maybe a thank you card, but, like, I don't have the ability to send, you know, tens of, you know, 10,000 plus to a municipal official to thank them.
You know, when I was a kid, many, many years ago, I got a job as a copy boy for the old Chicago Daily News. I'm not making this up. This is a newspaper that went out of business long before Dave was around. This shows you that I'm much older than Dave. Anyway, Dave, the point is, I had this job. And in those days, I'm not making this up, the Daily News and the Sun-Times were sister papers. They were owned by the same people. And so I would be walking down the halls and I would pass the office of CUP. And anybody's been around, if you're over the age of 50, probably maybe 55, you remember that CUP was this legendary gossip columns in the city of Chicago. And Dave, at Christmas time, outside of his office would be all these boxes. And they were gifts that people gave to him. And Cup was like proud that I don't take. He would leave the box like, I don't take. Cup has higher standards in terms of tips and gratuities or gratuities than the mayor of Portage. Do you follow what I'm saying? It's like,
I think you're right. You're talking about a different ethical standard here. I mean, they're all ethical. Everybody sets their own, I guess. But yeah, you're right. Cup had a standard where he didn't want people to think that his columns would be influenced by a gift.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, if you argue the other side of this coin, you know as well as I do that there are countless examples of where a Chicago mayor, pick one, or an Illinois governor, pick one, has taken an action on an ordinance or on a piece of legislation, and then 3 months later gets a $10,000 campaign contribution from a developer, from an interest group that was involved in pushing the bill, you know, on and on. And that is not deemed illegal. And so there is an issue to define here about, you know, if you're doing something after the fact, after the official act, when does it rise to the level of a crime and when is it innocent? And so I do think that there is a little complexity and nuance to that question. And that's why this has landed in front of the U.S. Supreme Court.
All right. So you mentioned that if there was any sympathy expressed by the justices during the hearing, it was done by the more conservative justice. What was sort of, if you could phrase it in an ideological, you know, a philosophical way, was the gist of their worldview as to why they were sympathetic to the mayor?
Well, I mean, this is a court that has had its own kind of internal scandals about gifts. I mean, Clarence Thomas, the justice, has, you know, been in the spotlight for, you know, favors he has gotten from, you know, from political friends. But what you would hear from, or what we did hear from, you know, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Gorsuch, a little bit from Justice Roberts, but mainly Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, was the idea that there are times when there is innocent gift giving to a public official. And, you know, they gave examples of, like, you know, what constitutes a bribe? Is it okay if I give somebody a $10 Amazon gift card as a thank you versus a $2,500 Amazon gift card? Does that larger volume, you know, larger size constitute a bribe? You know, that's kind of the line they were trying to establish. But again, you know, I think there are also absolutists out there who don't think that any kind of gift is appropriate to a public official. That's theoretically not why someone decides to get into civic life that way. And you know, it's always easy to kind of politely tell someone, no, thank you, I appreciate your offer. But you know, here again, I think it's a complicated, nuanced, complex question about, after the fact giving. On one occasion, you know, the campaign contribution arose. We haven't made campaign contributions illegal, nor should we. If anything, I think the takeaway from the deliberations we heard in front of the court was, you know, and before I go there, I mean, even Democratic justices, a few of them, there were a few of them that could understand the facts here and how it looked. But I think by the end of the discussion, there was, you know, one of them talked about, you know, a sense of confusion. I don't know that there's like a politically charged red line down the middle of the court with this, as there is some issues, mm-hmm. but it just happened to be that the majority seemed to be the ones, you know, grilling the Justice Department lawyer the longest.
Yeah. And this is me, surmising, this is not Dave. It could be that they were irritated by all the unfavorable coverage that Clarence Thomas received, and Justice Alito as well, when this, I think it was ProPublica that started breaking these stories left and right about gratuities being extended to Clarence Thomas. So how does this apply to the pending federal corruption trial of former Speaker Michael Joseph Madigan.
We started hearing about the Snyder case in the ComEd 4 proceedings last year. And, you know, I know in open court, Scott Lazar, who is the defense lawyer for former ComEd CEO Ann Pramaggiore, pointed to this case and predicted that the conviction wouldn't stand. And what, you know, in the ComEd case where Pramaggiore and this crew of former ComEd executives and lobbyists, Mike McLean, John Hooker, and Jay Doherty, all of them were convicted on a variety of 9 different counts. In 5 of those counts, they involved this disputed statute. And so there's, you know, there is some thinking that the government, if these counts are overturned, you know, at a minimum, all of those people convicted probably would be facing far less jail time, far less prison time than they would have to begin with. And there's a chance that the federal government might be confronted with this question of, do they have to even retry the entire case? And I think that would be something that would be, that will be debated if we see this statute, section 666, by the way, tossed. And, you know, we've seen that, you know, these folks, the 4 of these ComEd people, they were due to be sentenced in January. And the judge in the case, U.S. District Judge Harry Leinenweber, agreed to put off their sentencing until the disposition of the Snyder case. So we've seen that impact right there. And it also has an impact on the Madigan trial, although probably to a lesser extent, but it could upend what we expect to see happening with that as well.
See, now this is where I think I'm going to speak for all my listeners who are probably confused at this point, because the argument advanced by the mayor of Portage, or the former mayor of Portage and his lawyers, is that the $13,000 gig came after the awarding of the contract, and it was just an appreciation. The arguments raised in the Madigan ComEd cases that there was this ongoing relationship in which Madigan used his powers to favorably treat ComEd, and ComEd on an ongoing basis took care of Madigan and his people, put him on the payroll, et cetera, and so forth. So I don't see how they could use the Portage mayor's defense. What am I missing here, Dave?
Well, I mean, you know, in the ComEd case, there were 3 specific pieces of legislative action that dated back to 2011, so between 2011 and 2019. And if you go all the way back to 2011, you know, that's a period of time when some of these folks that wound up landing on ComEd's contracts, you know, their consulting contract portfolio, happens after that. And so the argument is, well, you know, if the company did this after the fact, so where is the quid pro quo? And I think that's the argument that is at play here, that there wasn't, they believe, in the ComEd case, there wasn't truly an established quid pro quo. And then that's where there's similarity with what, you know, the defense in the Snyder case say happened there.
So if they win, what's the future of bribery cases? Well, not just in Illinois, but everywhere. Have they effectively outlawed bribery cases the way they outlawed abortion with the Dobbs decision?
Well, they've narrowed the way, the circumstances under which someone can be charged and convicted of bribery, a state and local official. And the arsenal that the feds have, don't forget, is vast. There are, you know, any number of I mean, it used to be that you know, any kind of corrupt conversation that occurred over the phone would constitute wire fraud, or you know, any money changing hands and going into a bank account would constitute bank fraud. And you know, and with Madigan, you know, we're seeing now their use of the RICO statute, because they allege that there was an organized conspiracy that was taking place with Madigan. So, I mean, there are any number of ways that public officials could continue being charged. And, you know, again, if you play the recordings in their totality, they could be used any number of ways to support any number of charges, I think, against these folks.
Mm. What about Burke? Would this have any impact on the Ed Burke trial? We've talked the Ed Burke convictions now. We've talked so much about the Ed Burke case in this show. Do you see any possible impact on that conviction?
Not so much. I mean, I think that, you know, the only cases that we've heard any kind of discussion about have been the ComEd case, the Madigan case. There's also a case in September involving the former president of AT&T of Illinois, who is part of the broader one of the schemes that Madigan was charged with. He was charged with the same statute. So it's, you know, these are the cases that I think are in play. Burke, not so much. Mm.
Well, I would have greater sympathy. I must concede, I would have greater sympathy for the Portage case, where it wasn't directly putting him on board as a consultant or what have you. If the owner of the garbage truck company or the garbage can company had said, you know what, we really appreciate how fair he was in the awarding of this contract, and he showed such a great mind that we our personal interaction with him has convinced us that he's good for the citizenry as a whole, and we're going to give him a campaign contribution. You know, you and I would have been rolling our eyes, Dave, at that. I'm sure most working reporters in the city of Chicago, if they heard such a thing, would roll their eyes. But that fits the notion of gratuity. Do you follow? But that fits the notion of, we believe good deeds need to be rewarded. And what he did was a good deed that benefited more than us. It benefited the fine people of Portage by giving them outstanding garbage cans. And so we're going to give them a contribution. I feel that kind of phraseology might work a little more than what we have here. Your thoughts on that distinction?
Well, I mean, you're right. And I mean, I guess where I kind of come at it is that, you know, here we're talking about a $13,000 bundle of cash that winds up in this former mayor's pocket. I mean, you know, so long as there's not a spoken or written agreement that this is explicitly, you know, tied to your decision, mayor, that you did this, then where is the line? Is it okay for me as a contractor to say, all right, I'm going to go buy you a new house, or I'm going to buy you a new yacht. I'm going to buy you a charter airplane that you can, you know, I mean, where does it stop? And it's, you know, so long as there isn't a corrupt intent or a quid pro quo, you have these situations that, you know, could be pretty outlandish. And that I don't think the public would be thrilled with. You know, why again would a city contractor be putting a swimming pool in my mayor's backyard after they got something? You know, I mean, that just looks bad.
And furthermore, think about future garbage can deals. So, okay, this is just a general appreciation for the way you run your government. It's not because you gave us that garbage can contract, or you wrote the specifics of the contract proposal that favored us. I believe that was in your article. And so what about the next garbage cans? Do you follow what I'm saying? Like, well, now the $13,000 consulting fee still exists. So does that mean that they can't get the garbage can deals, future garbage can deals? Because, well, now that would be a quid pro quo. Do you follow me, Dave? I mean, kind of left the door open there.
Yeah, it's a ticklish situation all around. And I do, you know, I don't mean to be suggesting that I favor one side or another here, because I don't. But I think, I think what our discussion here kind of shows is that, you know, there are, I think there are accepted ways that we sort of expect our public officials to act and conduct themselves. And, you know, in Illinois, there've been efforts, you know, I remember covering a federal trial back in the mid 90s. It was the MSI trial in Springfield. And it was a federal trial where a state contractor, you know, had, had gotten a sweet deal with the Illinois Department of Public Aid under, under, former Governor Jim Edgar. And, you know, it, I remember the testimony in that case talked about how, you know, they were taking, this company was taking key contracting officials to, you know, Mexico and sending them gift baskets and lobster, you know, buckets of lobsters and stuff like that. And that triggered the State Gift Ban Act that wound up passing in the late 90s. And so, you know, there, again, I think in Illinois, we've kind of established that that isn't the way that we want our public officials to act.
Yeah, that's a very good point. We'll close with this guy because I know you got things to do. I think if it's good for CUP, it should be good for everyone, all politicians. We should have the CUP standards. That's KUP, youngsters, Irving, CUPs in it. And one last thing before you go, when you mentioned Scott Lazar as the defense lawyer, I had a little smile because I remember when he was the U.S. attorney. And this just this is just one more element of the whole dance, Dave, that always kind of always makes me smile. These guys learn the tricks of the trade on our dime. You know, I mean, I do. You and I both pay taxes to pay for them. And then they go use them to make a fortune defending guys. And I don't know. You think I'm too? I don't like that. I've never liked that, Dave. I know it's not illegal. I understand that there's no law that's being broken, but there's something that rubs me the wrong way. Do you think I'm off key? Do you, with that one? I'm being too.
You know, you see that happening with the state. You know, I remember like a case where. You know, it was a ComEd bill, ironically, where this lead sponsor of it scratched and clawed and fought his way to getting a bill that ComEd wanted through the General Assembly. And at the end of May one year, and then the next thing you know, within a matter of weeks, he's resigning his spot in the General Assembly to go work for ComEd. You know, it's the same kind of deal. And like, I don't know. I mean, you kind of, you talk about the lawyers here. Those folks, their skills are clearly in demand because we have such a fruitful supply of corruption in our state. So the demands are needed. But, you know, on the flip side, having spent as much time over at the Dirksen Federal Building this past year as I have, you know, within that U.S. Attorney's Office, there are career prosecutors there. The one of them that, you know, comes to mind is a assistant U.S. attorney named Diane MacArthur. And, you know, her time in that office dates all the way back to Operation Greylord in the 1980s. You know, so some of these folks stay put and they just continue being involved intimately in all of these corruption cases that come down the pike. And, you know, Lazar is an interesting figure because, you know, he knows bribery. He was a prosecutor as well before he was U.S. attorney. And some of his cases were involved in Operation Greylord, those bribery cases where, you know, judges in traffic court were being bribed to basically cut deals with defendants.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got to give credit to those careers, the career prosecutors, you know, I mean, they'll never make nearly as much money as some corporate defense lawyer will make, but I think they're staying true to their principles. So I know I'm sounding like Bosch. Have you ever seen or read Bosch books? Do you know who Bosch is? Michael Connelly. I love Bosch. Okay. Yeah. He's this homicide detective who can't stand criminal defense lawyers because he's in the pursuit of the truth. And he thinks they're just in the pursuit of the money. You know what I'm saying? Like he's looking for the who did it. Okay. And
but here's the deal with criminal defense lawyers, Ben. You don't need them till you need them.
Yeah, true. And you know, there was a great Bosch book and episode where he needed one. Okay, I'm just going to say that. And plus, Bosch's half brother is Mickey Holler, the Lincoln lawyer. So it's all convoluted and colluded. And I'm going to stop talking because Dave's got places to go. And now that I'm talking Bosch, I could do another hour. I just recommend those books to you, Dave, and the TV show if you haven't read or seen them already. So thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate you taking the time to educate us.
That's a pleasure. And I, you know what? As an intern at the Sun-Times, I was there when the Wabash Avenue Bridge was renamed the Irv Cupsinet Bridge.
So you know who Cup is. Do you remember, though? I think it was mostly liquor. There were boxes outside his office at Christmas time. And he,
yeah. Nope. Yeah. Yeah. I started at the Sun-Times, I think, when I was 32. And at that point, he was like 80 years old or older. And still going in every freaking single legend. Day. Yeah, he was just an institution there.
So my understanding of the way Cup operated was don't give him a gratuity, don't give him a bottle of liquor, none of that stuff. But he better not see you go to a rival gossip columnist before you come to him. After that, you're done, baby.
Okay. That would be painful.
So that's the Cup. That's the Cup rule there. All right. Thank you very much, Dave. You take care.
Ben. Yep.
That's David McKinney. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.